flowers at the door for those who are left behind and the ones who've gone before. Here it comes now.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Okay, so are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, well, welcome. This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to be talking about the... Oh, great, I don't have the year written down.
97.
The Saint, starring Val Kilmer and Elizabeth Shue. So this is a Brother Jay pick. Tell us, Brother Jay, why we're watching this movie this week.
Well, it's in my collection. It's a movie I own. I like Val Kilmer, although I think my favorite Val Kilmer movies and you and Drew's favorite Val Kilmer movies are very clearly different than mine. So this is one of my favorite Val Kilmer movies, not of all time, but this ranks upper in the higher of Val Kilmer positive. And it's a fun kind of popcorny flick that's kind of corny and kind of cheesy, but I kind of like it. So and so I think we have three of these movies that I picked that are Val Kilmer flicks, which are this, Top Secret, and Mission to Mars, I think it was.
Red Planet.
So, is it Red Planet?
It is Red Planet.
Mission to Mars is the other movie.
Yeah.
Red Planet. I get confused.
Isn't Mission to Mars like the Ice Cube movie?
I thought that was Sphere.
Oh, it could be. It could be any of them. Who knows? So I happened to watch Red Planet also this week just to get ready, but I didn't want to give short shrift to The Saint, which I had never seen before.
Oh, really? You have Mission to Mars. Oh, Mission to Mars is Tom Sizemore and Tim Robbins. And oh no, is it Tom Sizemore? No, Tim Robbins, Gary Sinise, and Don Cheadle.
Okay, yeah, because Tom Sizemore was in Red Planet.
Yeah. Okay, this is a really good Mission to Mars is pretty good movie too.
Oh, we can add that to our list.
Maybe. Oh God, nobody liked it. Gee, yikes! Wow. Maybe it's not as good as I remember.
Well, we'll find out, won't we? Anyway, let's talk about the movie at hand.
So yeah, so you hadn't seen it before. I had seen this in the movie theater, so I must have seen this with somebody else then, clearly.
Well, it was 97, so you were in Portland already. And I know I didn't watch it in the theater, and I know there was a one of my bosses at work was a big Val Kilmer fan. And she said it wasn't a great movie, but she loved it because it was all about him.
I think it depends on what you set your sights on. I think it's a great movie, but it's not a great plot. It's corny, like I said, it's corny and cheesy. It's total cheeseball, but it's fun. You know, it's got some fun parts and it's got some, you know, it's got some tension and, you know, it's not going to win any awards, but it actually made enough money. It did not break even at the box office, but it made, because the budget was $65 million and the box office total was $61 million. So it was a loss there, but then it made another $35 million in rentals.
Oh yeah. I think it made a crap ton of money considering what they put out.
Yeah. Well, and we'll talk later about how the movie changed completely halfway through after the first screening. So
I was going to get to that. So, do you have any history with the character of Simon Templar, the Saint?
I'm tangentially aware of the Roger Moore BBC TV series.
Okay. Cause this character has a long history. There have been several different versions of radio dramas of the Saint, and I have not read any of the Saint books, although I've looked at them on Amazon, or not Amazon, on Audible, an Amazon company, but have yet to pull the trigger. Partly because the radio shows, I don't know whether they're really my cup of tea. The character of Simon Templar started out in a long-running series of books by Leslie Charteris, and they're published between 1928 and 1963. After 63, other authors collaborated with him on the Saint books until 1983.
So kind of like a Bond Broccoli, you know, expedition.
Yeah, or kind of like how Clive Cussler did all those Dirk Pitt books, and then he had other writers coming on board.
Who is writing the Bond novels now?
Oh, I don't know.
I read one on Audible. I listened to one on Audible a year ago, I want to say. Jeffrey Deaver wrote a Bond novel.
Oh, okay. Well, he's a name brand guy.
Yeah, so I don't know if he's continuing the franchise, but he wrote, I guess it was released in 2012. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure who's writing them now. So,
well, not only we have these like gigantic collection of books, but we have 16 motion pictures. We have comic strips, comic books, 3 separate television series, a bunch of planned television series.
Did you see the failed pilot for 2013?
With Eliza Dushku?
I so would love to see that. I'm guessing it never made it out of the studio.
Well, after we get done talking about the plot, I will tell you some things that Wikipedia has told me, how this diverged from the Simon Templar character that the books portrayed. But since we're talking about the movie, we'll just stick with that. Although I do have a little bit more history, and this has to do with the director, Philip Noyce.
He said that he wants to release the original cut of the film on a DVD edition.
Well, he's an interesting director. I think he's Australian. And he's most notable for a wide variety of films, some of which we're going to be talking about. He directed Dead Calm, which I thought was a pretty good kind of horror movie set in a boat.
Was that blonde, Nicole Kidman?
I believe so, yeah, on a boat.
Who's the dude? Who was the dude character? The guy from... I can see his face. The guy from Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and...
Oh, yes. Guy Pearce.
Yes. Yeah. All right. I've seen that movie.
It's good.
And who's the, like, Billy Zane was the...
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because I think there's only 3 people on this whole little saga.
Pretty much. I mean, there's other people kind of tangentially, but those are the 3 characters. That was an okay movie. I've seen that movie repeatedly, but I've never sat down to watch it. It's just been like, oh, this movie's on, and I watch it on TV, and then I end up sitting through the end of it inexplicably. But
well, also in his catalog, he directed Blind Fury, which is, I think, the Rutger Hauer movie where he's blind, an action hero.
Oh, gosh.
But he also directed Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger.
Oh, The Bone Collector.
Yep. Sliver, The Quiet American, Rabbit Proof Fence, and Salt.
I haven't seen Salt. Sliver. Did you and I go see Sliver?
No. I have not seen Sliver.
Oh, wow.
But can I give you a quote from him about Sliver?
Sure.
So here's his trouble with Sliver in 1993. He said...
Trouble with it?
Well, you'll see. He was going through some stuff, and everybody else was going through some stuff. So the quote is... I just became so tired I couldn't get off the floor. I had to have doctors constantly injecting me with vitamins. I was trying to give up smoking at the time, and I don't think I was all that stable myself, as I'd been inhaling up to 6 packs a day previously. I was terribly addicted and had to decide to give up before Sliver. This probably wasn't a good idea for my equilibrium. But every day of pressure on the Sliver set caused bad nicotine-induced panic attacks, so the chaos of the whole thing was not something I could blame on others. But the film had become a Hollywood nightmare with the producer, Robert Evans, who from the beginning had dreamt of his movie being directed by someone else. a writer, Joe Esterhaus, who had abandoned a best-selling novel to pen his own version of the story, an actress, Sharon Stone, who I couldn't communicate with and who loathed her co-star, William Baldwin, and a producer and cinematographer, Vilmos Zsigmond, who was creating beautiful images at a snail's pace on a set that made more noise than the actors when they spoke their lines.
Wow.
He had terrible, terrible dread going every day to that movie.
Wow. It's a dark, gray, just punch in the balls movie over and over again. And yeah, Sharon Stone and the Baldwin, whichever Baldwin it was, Billy Baldwin?
Must be, yeah.
Whoever. I guess they did not get along at all. I mean, terribly. And at one point, at some kiss that they had, she bit his tongue so bad, I believe, that he couldn't talk for a couple of days.
Oh, that's funny.
But I don't know if that's true or not. It's just that's a story I heard. So.
Well, that's what you get for putting your tongue in the mouth of a lady who doesn't like you.
Yeah. So, but I recall liking Sliver, although I haven't rewatched it in. It's been a while. So I suspect it probably doesn't hold up very well.
Well, on The Saint, he says that it was an opportunity at the time to create a franchise. At the end of the first screening, Sherry Lansing, the head of the studio, was genuinely crying. She said it was a brilliant film, that it was Dr. Zhivago-ish. Later, I feel resentful that Sherry Lansing had initially been so enthusiastic about the movie, only to eventually talk me into cutting those things which had moved her when she saw the film the first time. And yeah, we'll get to what's different in the director's cut, initial cut, than what he was talked into making later. But my first comment about this movie was, whoa boy. I know why Val Kilmer took this role. It's a dozen roles in one.
Well, and I don't know if you saw who else was potentially cast for the part.
Oh, I think they offered, Ralph Fiennes, like $1 million for the role, but he turned it down.
Yeah. Boggling. It's just mind-boggling.
You wonder how much it cost for Val Kilmer, you know, how much he took out of it.
Yeah, but I suspect he got at least $1 million out of it. Plus, by the way, Val Kilmer had his wig had its own entry in the credits.
Oh, that's funny.
His wig person. He had a whole wig person.
Oh yeah. Well, he was literally a dozen different characters.
But this movie had been shopped around since the 80s. And so Pierce Brosnan and Roger Moore was actually they were trying to get him. Mel Gibson, Kevin Costner, Johnny Depp, Daniel Day-Lewis, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Those are all people that were up for the role.
Well, despite what I'll have to say about the movie overall, I think Val Kilmer did a pretty good job.
I think so, too. And it's clear that watching this, that they were hoping that they would get a sequel.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely like a franchise-type movie because it's fairly comic booky, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would not compare it to Dr. Zhivago. Well, at least I don't think so. I've never seen Dr. Zhivago, but the fact that our grandmother loved it means it probably wasn't a comic book franchise type movie. It's interesting. I think it's a little bit of a product of its time also.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, shall we dive into the plot?
I have to say that the opening of this movie is a little confusing even still.
Yeah, well, the opening of this movie paints a completely different picture of the saint, like his origin of his name and all that stuff. Like, that's all created strictly for this edition, for this movie.
The whole device of, you know, the Far East yesterday, and then it moves into Moscow tomorrow.
Well, I kind of like that. That was kind of cute.
Yeah, well, anyway. I think it's a lazy device, but
yeah,
I think it could have done without it. But
I think it's a comic book kind of device.
Yeah.
So, at St. Ignatius Orphanage, a rebellious boy named John Rossi refers to himself as Simon Templar and leads a group of fellow orphans as they attempt to run away to escape their harsh treatment. When Simon is caught by the head priest, he witnesses the tragic death of a girl who he had taken a liking to when she accidentally falls from a balcony. It's a very sad scene.
It is kind of disproportionately jarring.
Well, yeah, we'll talk. Let me just do a quick tangent. Last week, my daughter saw the newest version of Annie. She has not seen any other version of Annie. Annie, of course, the new version is what I heard comedian Doug Benson refer to as, also known as Orphan Black.
That's genius.
Yeah, it is not a great movie, by the way. But she loved the song Hard Knock Life just from the ads.
Of course.
And she's really into trying to memorize lyrics these days. So she's trying to, I can hear her in the back of the car as I'm playing it, the car stereo. She's trying to kind of sing along, but she's kind of mumbling until she gets to the part she knows. So, it's a process. So we go to the Duck Pound playground yesterday, and what is she singing as she's walking in there? She's like, "It's a hard knock life. It's a hard knock life. Blah, 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 blah. When you're a foster kid. Blah, 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 blah." And like, oh, you can't scream out when you're a foster kid at a park with a bunch of other kids around.
Yeah. I can see that being a bit of a problem.
Yeah. So I also bought her the clean version of the song Fancy, the Iggy Azalea with Charlie XCX. Well, the chorus is really cute because she got the chorus in her head watching the ad for Kid Bop or whatever, where they have kids singing it. Clearly the kids aren't singing the Charlie XCX lines in the song.
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, either that or maybe Iggy Azalea is the one who's the rapist. But it's kind of not really for kids, the rap part of the song. So luckily she likes the Hard Knock Life better. But
you can't win them all.
The Annie version, the newest version, the little girl does a fine job and it's a nice little update. And the only really bad part is Cameron Diaz is horrible. She may have been written as horrible or over the top or whatever, but
that's almost always a true statement.
Yeah, it's not great. Horrible.
I like her occasionally in roles, but for the most part, she's not a selling point if it comes down to watching a movie.
I liked her when she was like, sort of indie queen. Like there was that movie where she and Jennifer Aniston, she's the one, I think. And she was fine in Something About Mary. She was very likable in that. Anyway. Okay. So
I'm trying to think what movie I saw her in that. I didn't dislike her in.
Yeah.
But there's lots of music that people sing that they don't understand the meanings to, that they think are benign songs. And then I'm like, I've had this discussion at work, because the core song, There She Goes, which is all about heroin. And I'm like, listen to the lyrics, there she goes again, racing through my brain, pulsing through my veins. What do you think? That's a very thinly veiled metaphor.
It's a toe tapper, though.
Anyway, that was our trip to Tangentville.
Yeah,
we'll be returning to your show now.
Okay, back on tracks here. Not sure what that sound was, but
yeah, I don't know.
So we flash forward to tomorrow. Now we meet Simon Val Kilmer, who is an adult. He's a professional thief, dubbed the Saint, and he is dubbed the Saint because he uses the names of Catholic saints as aliases. This, by the way, also not in the book. In the books, he uses all the initials ST as aliases, but doesn't involve saints at all.
Which, as somebody who's a spy, you wouldn't do either of those things.
No, not really. And you can see how you would use the same initials just because it'd be easy to remember. But yeah, it seems like a very 1234 kind of password. And again, I have to remind myself that this is 1997, so we're going to have a little bit of technology issues in this. Like, he has a really serious cell phone that now looks like a toy, but at the time was pretty serious.
Well, also, like, this is a big ad for Volvo and Apple.
Absolutely. I love those what were they? The Mac laptops?
Yeah.
Really, really funny and cool.
It was very stylish. I mean, you know, the movie was a very stylish thing. But there was lots of product placement, which was fine. Because I don't think it was, I'm not sure what the word, it wasn't garish.
No, it was, you know? It wasn't any worse than any of the Bond movies these days.
No.
So
speaking of, did you see that, Daniel Craig turned down the $1 million from Sony?
No.
He doesn't want to use the new Sony phone. So yeah, like $1 million. He's like, no, it's okay.
Yeah, because James Bond would use an iPhone because it works. Or maybe a Samsung.
Yeah. So.
Anyway. Okay, so we meet Simon Templar, who is going to steal a valuable microchip belonging to a Russian oil company. He stages a burglary during a political rally held by the company's owner, Ivan Tretiak, played by our buddy Rade Sherbingia from Snatch and Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, I wrote that his hair really should have its own billing.
Oh, he's great. I'd watch him in anything. He's fantastic.
He's always great. He's always a joy to see in a movie.
He is.
And especially because he clearly liked this, you know, he really liked this role.
Oh, so. he was eating it up, but in a good way. I mean, once you realize this is going to be all kind of over the top, it's fine. That's what you want in a performance. He's a villain. So he is a former Communist Party boss and a billionaire oil and gas oligarch that is rallying support against the Russian president. Now, Simon is caught in the act by Tretiak's son, Ilya, played by Valery Nikolaev. Who, by the way, Valery Nikolaev is a dancer by profession. And he is, I'm surprised that he hasn't been in more movies. He does a fine job in this movie.
Yeah, I agree.
But I guess his main love is dance. In fact, you can see a video online where Valery Nikolaev, as a 45-year-old, is competing in the Russia's like Circus of the Stars thing, where he and two acrobats, young female acrobats, do this air ballet thing. Like they're being suspended by those like straps or whatever from the ceiling, and they're twisting and turning and using all this upper body strength.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing. I'll send you the link or put it on Facebook. Still a very handsome guy. And also, he has some good hair in this movie. So, after learning of this heist, Tretiak contacts Simon and hires him to steal a revolutionary cold fusion formula discovered by American electrochemist Emma Russell, played by Elizabeth Shue. He wishes to acquire Emma's formula, which creates clean, inexpensive energy, so he can monopolize the energy market during a severe oil shortage in Russia. What did you think about Elizabeth Shue's performance?
I was not impressed. She really didn't do much for me.
Oh, you are so kind. She is awful in this movie. Awful, 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 awful.
Don't you think the character was kind of written that way, though?
Perhaps. Absolutely.
I mean, and I'm not disagreeing with you, by the way. I don't think this was well acted for her. But I think some of it may have been the writing. But yeah, I'm just like, I don't actually know other movies that I've seen her in. Cause she's not really memorable to me, and she's not memorable in this part. Which is why the original, I would have been fine with the original version of this movie. Cause spoilers, cause they killed her. I think it was a combination of just, she's not a great actress in this role. And I think the part was not well written for her.
Well, you know what she reminds me of? One Denise Richards playing a nuclear physicist in a Bond movie. Isn't she in GoldenEye?
Is she?
Denise Richards plays Dr. Christmas whatever.
Denise Richards.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen's ex-wife. Starship Troopers.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking Denise Crosby. Denise Richards, GoldenEye, was she Christmas?
Yes, she was.
Oh, well, she doesn't even get top billing.
Yeah, she's horrible. She is unbelievable as a physicist or an engineer. And Elizabeth Shue, and again, it maybe is written. Maybe let's blame Joe Esterhaus because he has a lot to answer for. But
you must be thinking of a different movie because it's not GoldenEye.
I think it's a Pierce Brosnan movie. Yeah. Elizabeth Shue's, first of all, she's at this, where is she giving her little speech? It's to some university class or?
Yeah. In the UK somewhere.
And they keep saying, okay, this cold fusion, it's been debunked. They can't reproduce it. And how does she says she has the answer to it. And what does she use as proof?
But I read somewhere that the experiment couldn't be replicated. So how do we know it works? Well, we don't. Not yet. But if you remember Einstein, he knew the theory of relativity to be true long before he could prove it. I mean, he felt the truth. And some of us feel the same way about cold fusion. Because it's there, it's in nature. The raw, natural power just waiting to be harnessed. And when we ignite that cold fusion fire, I mean, just imagine. There's more energy in 1 cubic mile of seawater than in all the known oil reserves on Earth. I mean, you could drive your car 55 million miles on a gallon of heavy water. Maybe the end of pollution. Warmth for the whole world.
That's pretty much what she says. Trust me.
Well, that always works. What are you talking about?
Oh, it's the most bullshit ever.
The world is not enough.
Okay, there you go.
So, in my opinion, as one of the best, I know this is gonna make people angry. Come on, write me nasty letters. To me, as the best Bond theme song.
Oh, could be. Yeah. Oh, we can get into it. I mean, we're going to definitely dip back into Bond land here sometime soon. Maybe for episode 107.
we're coming up quick.
Yeah.
We should have done it for episode 77.
Yeah, well, what can you do?
The world is not enough, by the way. Shirley Manson's garbage.
So we meet, again, Emma Russell, who's she's the maiden in distress is what she is. She is out of her element, if you pardon a chemistry joke.
Wow. You went there. You really can't avoid the pun.
I can't, no. And it's horrible. But she apparently has solved the problem with cold fusion, and she keeps the mathematical formula in little slips of paper post-its kind of hidden in her panties. And I wish I was making that up.
In her bra.
Well, whatever.
No, there's a difference. There's a big difference between bra and panties.
You don't think she keeps it in her panties?
No, because she keeps reaching. No, the whole point is that she keeps it in her boobies.
Okay. I thought it was definitely. She said underwear. I was thinking.
No, he said underwear.
Okay. All right. By the way, you learned in the beginning that Simon Templar has a bank account that has $42.5 million in it. And he's going to retire when he has $50 million. So he hopes to be one and done. And that's why he's going to charge $8 million for the formula. Because, you know, the Simon Templar character, he's a thief. He's a rogue. He is, well, he sort of comes off as a Robin Hood character, but he's basically like a gentleman thief. He's not a good guy. So he uses the alias Thomas More, poses as an Afrikaner, and seduces Emma through the use of self-inflicted wounds and poetry.
Well, you skip past the part where he steals the microchip in some of the worst stage fighting we've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm sorry. When he steals, there's a whole bunch of James Bond kind of fighting, including Ilya, the son of Rade, has this cane that, as it turns out, the cane never really gets used in the version of the movie that we saw. He waves his cane around for no other reason than to do a cane flourish. And yet, there's a reason for the cane that we just never got to see.
Yeah. There's a lot in this movie that doesn't make sense, I suspect, because of the way it was recut.
It must, because there's a bunch of fun. I mean, okay, when he steals the chip in the very beginning of the movie, there's all this James Bond stuff, a little bit like Mission Impossible stuff. You know, he's in a crazy kind of dressed up like a human fly kind of thing.
Yeah, he's dressed up with this strange wetsuit, googly-eyed outfit, yeah.
Yeah. And so he jumps off of buildings and he's running through tunnels. And I mean, so there's all this great kind of stuff. It's great. It's a great action kind of movie thing, all of which I approve of. Even the goofy, like little winks and nods at the camera sometimes is fine. It's all perfectly, perfectly acceptable. And I even didn't mind his many, many disguises. I was thinking, have you ever seen the movie Master of Disguise? Or
not that I recall.
The Dana Carvey movie?
No, probably not.
I could not get like 20 minutes into it because it was so bad. And I like Dana Carvey a lot, but it was so bad. But anyway, this was much better. And even though Val Kilmer has those, Bugs Bunny teeth, he's still very charming. Like, except for Tom Cruise, who doesn't like Val Kilmer? And I don't mean Tom Cruise, I just mean Maverick doesn't like Iceman. Or Iceman doesn't like Maverick, basically just because we need attention for no reason kind of character. Oh, by the way, the poetry that Thomas More tells Emma.
I see my angel for the first time, know my purpose, feel my birth. Hear at first faintly, then distinctly, the sweet strains of our union. Our love heats up the cold universe and gives my tired, desperate
heart. Purified by our kisses, are eternally healed. Do you like it?
Who did you write it for?
You are following me. All its destiny. Either way, it's weird.
Very weird.
Was written by Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
You could tell Val Kilmer thinks, I don't know, he probably thinks very highly of himself. But he's got that schoolboy grin, so you can't blame him for it.
At least he didn't sing his own songs.
He didn't transform himself into 12. Well, maybe he did. Who knows? So then we have a conversation where he and Emma end up having a one night stand and he goes through her underwears and steals her formula. But she is super nervous because she doesn't deal well with relationships. She's sort of the virginal doctor, intellectual, whatever. Oh, by the way, Hugh has a heart condition that is never explained except she has to take her heart pills.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Well, and
she says, later "Oh, on, my heart," all the time and has to immediately take these pills.
Yeah. And later on becomes a point where I actually still yell at the television.
Well, anyway, but we have this fun little thing, and I'll put it in here, where he stabs himself in the head to get an injury that she has to help patch up, and she says, "This is gonna hurt," and he goes, "Ah!" And she freaks out because she has a heart condition, and he could have killed her.
I know. Yeah. Which is hilarious.
Yes. And then says, "I'm sorry, are you all right?" She goes, "Yeah, I should go."
I'm glad that it stopped bleeding. I don't need stitches. We're going to have to disinfect it, though.
You really are an angel. You are.
It's gonna hurt.
Yeah.
I thought I was just joking. I should go.
Oh, no.
Yes, you.
Take off your pants.
Pardon?
I mean your sweater. There's blood on it. I'll wash it.
Take off your pants. My God. So he steals her innocence and her formula. And Tretiak, he gives it to Tretiak and he realizes that it's incomplete. And so he orders his henchmen, led by his son Ilya, to kill Simon and kidnap Emma in order to obtain the remaining information. Now, heartbroken, Emma goes to the police to report the theft. And the Inspector Teal and Rabineau inform her that Simon is a wanted international criminal. So we cut to Russia, where Simon goes to the Russian club where Tretiak and his mob goons hang out at, and he's dressed as Tretiak, which was kind of fun. And so they have this nice little exchange where Templar says, after he gets the money or whatever, he says, "You know what the hardest part of being you is? Pretending to be so bad in bed." Which would be a better line, but sadly, I think Emma drags this movie down. But anyway, Emma tracks Simon down in a hotel in Moscow and confronts him about the theft and his betrayal. Yeah, he's not he mentions to her in this conversation that, "I am very hard to find." She goes, "I found you, jackass. You use names of saints everywhere. I just had to go through the manifest." Yeah, so. But luckily, she alerts the authorities about him because she's got the police in tow to arrest him. Well, the Russian police are loyal to Tretiak because it's a mob-controlled country, and they arrest both of them. And as they're taken in the police van, there's a little bit of kind of fun. It's sort of allusion to blowjob humor in the van.
Yeah, it was kind of, it was one of those where I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah, I mean, it was cute, you know, if you're like 15 and are tittering. But then, anyway, they escape out of the van as it's brought to the mansion of Tretiak. So then they flee through the suburbs. And they end up in the chase scene where Ilya and his guy, goons, are following Simon and Emma. And Simon ends up having to duck underwater and experience a little hypothermia. And I guess I'm going to forgive a little bit of the hypothermia scenes because he would have died. He would not have been able to walk, I don't think. But that's okay. We'll get there. When first of all, the reason why Simon has to dive into the stream, river, whatever it is because Emma's heart meds fall in there.
Yeah, she has to get to her heart pills.
Yes. So, and then he has to duck his head underwater until Ilya walks away. I don't know exactly how he can see so well through the water, but meh.
Well, the question would be, if he can see so well up through the water, somebody could easily see down into the water.
Well, there you go. There's that. That's a very good point, actually. After Ilya wanders away with his guys looking elsewhere, Simon and Emma eventually go to this place for help and are helped by a local prostitute. And do you know who plays the local prostitute?
No.
It's Lucia Sabergia, Rade Sabergia's daughter.
Oh, I have to back up. I forgot. So when they're at the bar, by the way, and I said, so literally the real rat race.
Yes, at the Russian bar.
Yeah. Also, did you notice there's like the Russian Ray Romano doing magic tricks?
I did not see that.
You didn't notice the big, weird, tall Uncle Fester, crazy-looking dude does do the magic trick with the beer bottle in the glass. He's dressed in, like, the red tux.
Oh, I guess I just didn't pay too much attention.
You should go back and watch just for that part, because you'll laugh out loud.
Okay.
Ah!
was a seriously, it's like the Russian Ray Romano, okay. a la Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. And also, they managed to find the one hooker in all of Russia that happens to have a secret police hideaway in her apartment.
Well, no, I said there's a hypothermia scene in the Anne Frank house.
I know, but I'm just like, how did they manage it? They just happened upon, you know, anyway.
Yeah. So, well, apparently everybody has an Anne Frank house in Russia. Didn't you know that?
I don't know. You know, they beat Hitler. You'd think they wouldn't still have those.
Hey, it works, you know. So they have to do the hypothermia thing where you have to get skin to skin to warm people up. Of course, in real life, it probably takes more than 7 minutes. Where he's all warmed up in 7 minutes, they get fully back dressed and back into the chase. So the old lady dimes them out, and they have to flee. And that's when they go into a sewer system. And they meet Frankie, a fence, who tries to sell them paintings, but ends up selling them the directions through the underground sewer system that leads to the American Embassy. So they go through the sewer tunnel, and the tunnel that opens right under the embassy, apparently, is blocked off, as you can imagine. But the next one isn't. So they end up popping up after a little bit of fun little action things in the sewer. They end up right under Ilya's van. And that's where they have to make a choice where Simon is going to cause a distraction while Emma runs for safety toward the embassy.
She sprints towards the embassy.
Yes.
With her heart condition.
Yes, she does. Yes.
Sprints.
Yes.
With no problem.
She's sprinting toward these guys with automatic weapons screaming, "I'm an American, let me in." It seems like they should have drawn down on both those people. And
yeah, I think nowadays what would happen is you would get shot.
Yeah, they'd shoot them both and then figure it out later.
Yeah.
But I decided that might have been in poor taste.
Yeah, I will post a picture on Facebook later of my bath mat that I just bought. I'm going to have to return one of them.
It's got a problem with the design.
Yes.
Excellent.
So I have fake hardwood. I have laminate flooring in my bathroom.
Yes.
So there's a pattern, right? It's this wood pattern and it goes, the grain, I'm making motions with my hands. Like, of course you could see them. Anyway, so the planks are laid out in, you know, linear fashion, obviously, in a certain pattern. And the bath mats I got three bath mats, two bath mats, and then one that is a, you know, one of those contoured toilet hugger things. Not to be confused with your all-night bin toilet hugger thing.
Yes.
But so the bath mats are all striped. And so I'm like, oh, cool. And I lay them all down, and the bath mat stripes line up with the wood, except for the toilet hugger, which the stripes are all 90-degree angles the wrong direction.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And it actually, Derek's been making fun of me, but he's like, no, it shows the flow. And I'm like, no, I can't have it in my bathroom. It would be one thing if I didn't have a pattern on the floor already, but yeah, it's going to have to go. I'm going to have to find an alternative because it actually, Derek's like ridiculous. But I'm like, it actually gives me angst.
Can you turn the other bath mats around so they're all the wrong direction?
I can't do that. I can't do that because then it will be contrary to the wood.
We don't want perpendicularism.
No, I can't have that.
No.
That's totally the wrong feng shui.
Yeah, well, not only that, but, you know, it's like sort of like cutting meat.
I love our segues.
Anyway, so okay.
All right.
Yeah, okay. No, that's fine. Actually, it's actually not like cutting meat. It's exactly the opposite of cutting meat. You want to cut meat against the grain, but you want your towels to be toward the grain.
All right.
The pattern. Yeah. I don't know. Turns out it's not at all like cutting meat.
All right. Yeah.
Although, you know what you should make? You should make the toilet hugger bath mat combination that is the shape of the average American person passed out over after throwing up in the toilet.
Yes. So it can be like the pre outline of the chalk outline that I have to come and do when you're dead and they can't revive you.
A little pillow also to keep your head elevated so you don't.
Yeah, that's a great idea. We should. I'm telling you, we should trademark that crap.
Well, you got to make it the size of your typical dorm bathroom.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, be great.
Yeah, because I'll be serving lots of beer at my gluten restaurant.
Or maybe it could be like, yeah, I saw that. It's hilarious. Okay, sorry, back to this movie. So she runs like heck toward the guys with guns, but they let her into the embassy because she speaks with an English or with an American accent, and Ilya does not. So,
yeah.
And
well, she was pretty and blonde, apparently.
Yeah, well, that isn't her. So, yeah, no, she looks like a lost American tourist more than she looks like an electrochemist. So,
this is true.
He escapes when he rigs the car to blow up that saves him from Ilya killing him and also severely burns Ilya. Now, here's where the movie gets all wacky, and you're going to tell us why later. But at this point, Simon plants a listening device in Tretiak's office and learns he plans to perform a coup by selling the cold fusion formula to Russian president because the formula doesn't work. So he's going to sell it to the Russian president, and then he's going to say that the Russian president wasted billions of dollars on this useless technology, and therefore that's how he's going to have a coup. It's a very bold plan. It's ridiculous, but it's bold. So then he plans to use that fallout to install himself as president, and everything will be fine. In the meantime, Emma finishes the equation to complete her formula, and Simon delivers that information to Tretiak's physicist, Dr. Lev Botkin, who builds the apparatus that proves the formula works. So it's going to be like an old switcheroo. So Simon has to infiltrate the president's residence in the Kremlin and let him know of the conspiracy just before the Tretiak loyalist military people come and arrest the president. And so they have this massive gathering in Red Square where Tretiak makes the accusations against the president. But then what happens? When he turns on the cold fusion reactor to demonstrate that it doesn't work, it works.
Wah-wah.
So he is then also revealed to have caused the heating oil shortage by illegally stockpiling vast amount of heating oil underneath his mansion. So that takes care of the Russians. In the meantime, Simon shows up at Emma's place. They make sweet, sweet love. And the next day he wakes up and she's not there. She has left him a pin that she got in Catholic school or something, but is the iconic symbol of the Saint series. It's the Saint pin, which has been seen in books and movies for the last, 50 years. And she goes to attend a news conference at the University of Oxford, where she gives the formula to the world. Now, Simon attends the conference in disguise and sits right next to one of the inspectors who's holding a picture of Val Kilmer. And as he drives away, he listens to a news broadcast voiced by Roger Moore, reporting that $3 billion was recently donated to the Red Cross, Salvation Army, and the United Nations Children's Fund. And that's presumably that since Simon had access to Tretiak's accounts, he donated the money anonymously to the charities. And
right. A
nonprofit foundation led by Dr. Botkin is being established to develop the cold fusion technology and give it to the world. Even though Simon would like to have sold it for a ton of money.
Yeah, he would like to monetize and capitalize on that investment.
Because he is, after all, a thief, a man of money. He's in it for the money. He's not in it for the heroism.
Yeah, he is. He doesn't care about humanity.
No. No. He happens to do the right thing, but only because it's in his own interest as well. So, tell us about the original ending of this movie.
Well, so, in the original part of the movie, they kill her off, I think, supposedly halfway through the movie. And then it becomes this big, Val Kilmer has to go and get vengeance. And so there's a very different alternate reality than this movie where he's got to avenge the death and, he's got to go make up for the love that he really feels for this dead woman. And So it was a very different choice, but I guess audiences didn't like that they killed her off, which is, you know, again, as we discussed, her death would have probably not hurt the movie.
Also, she dies, she collapses while giving a lecture and dies in the Saint's arms. But just before that, Ilya had stabbed her in the leg with the tip of his cane.
Yeah.
So it's like a cane poison kind of thing, which has happened before in, I think, what, umbrella poisoning or something. It's a spy staple.
Well, and plus the whole point of the beginning of the movie where they're talking about, where Tretiak Sr. is talking about the chandelier, you know, how high do you want it? This high, you know, all the way up. The chandelier makes an important appearance. So,
yeah, actually, he and the Saint and Tretiak Jr. are fighting on the stairwell. The stairwell disintegrates, and then they end up on the chandelier above the blazing oil. So, yeah, so you're right. The chandelier plays a big part in the original ending.
Yeah, so which is kind of like the, you know, it would have been a Bond-esque kind of fighting scene, I imagine.
Yes. And at the end, he finds a letter from Emma, the Saint does. And so as he reads it, a tear fills his eye, and he vows from now on to use his skills only for good. By the way, it's funny because I guess the footage of the original ending features permanently in the film's main trailer. So, again, people get to kind of trailer screwed.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But, yeah. So it makes you wonder, you know, why he didn't stick more to his guns about... I mean, I guess the studio gets final rights anyway, but...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. The producers are putting up the money, so they get to have it their way. But, okay, so here are the differences in Val Kilmer's The Saint, or not really Val Kilmer's, but this movie's The Saint, how it diverged from the other renditions, and specifically the books. Because... I guess this it revived his use of aliases, although in the books, he didn't use the Christian Saint aliases. It was, again, the initials ST. But the big thing is, Val Kilmer's a saint is not able to defeat the gangster in hand-to-hand combat and is forced to flee, and that would never have happened in the Saint books. The Saint would have kicked the guy's ass in hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah. I see that.
Val Kilmer's Saint refrained from killing people, and the main villains end up standing trial. And in the books, he would have killed them. It would have been there would have been no qualms about it.
Oh, very nice.
And Kilmer's Saint is presented as a master of disguise, but the Saint in the books, he doesn't really use sophisticated disguises so much as just his ability to kind of be the everyman to kind of slip in and out of situations.
Blend.
And again, Roger Moore played the Saint, and Vincent Price was the voice of the Saint in some of the radio dramas, although apparently he didn't do a great job compared to the other Saint actors. Like, they thought Vincent Price's Saint was boring compared to the other ones.
Huh.
Which is interesting because, you know, I think Vincent Price has a great radio voice. Very kind of over the top, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, he did.
So I'm curious to see what it would sound like compared to the other ones. And the fact that they had Roger Moore doing the voiceovers in the cameo was pretty great. I mean, that was fun. The whole thing was fun. It made money. It is a completely enjoyable experience. It is not heavy lifting, though.
No, like I said, it's corny and cheesy. And, you know, I just like it because it's kind of fun.
Well, I can't quickly find the review. There was a review that compared Elizabeth Shue's performance to her performance in Leaving Las Vegas. Like, are you kidding? Leaving Las Vegas was a really both sad and complex character. Her character was not complex at all in this movie. It was buffoonery.
In fact, it was so not complex, she was completely baffled by the guy with the bad South African accent.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, basically, she, you know, obviously Val Kilmer would be attractive to most people, but all it took was a funny accent, a little bit of sketching, and leather pants. And she was, as Drew might say, she was DTF.
Yeah, and you know, and then, you know, self-inflicted head wounds.
Of course, because everybody loves a drunk that hurts himself.
So a couple things. There's a point where they meet at the restaurant where he's watching her from afar as she's looking through his sketchbook and reading the poetry. And he walks over to the table and then he puts his wine glass down. And then like there's a cut, there's just a jump in the scene. And then suddenly he's eating, he's sitting down and there's food. So that was one of those continuity errors, clearly, where they cut something. Cause like, where'd the food come from? Cause it wasn't there just a second ago. Also at the end of the movie, if you watch the credit right before the credits, when Val Kilmer's driving off in the Volvo product placement, there's a halo over his head.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't notice it when I watched it, but I read that that was the case, and that's pretty cool. I mean, you know.
It's very simple, but so I want to talk about, I don't think this is like, this is not an award-winning movie, and I don't think it's the best movie ever. I just happen to like it as well.
Yeah, that's fine.
And I like it because it's one of those dumb, fun movies. So I'm not saying that people should go out and you know, but it's a fun movie. It's a fun little movie to see. It's not full of like blood and guts. And
oh yeah, no, I'm not blaming you that I think that they should have added just a little scene in the beginning that shows that Elizabeth Shue's character was profoundly mentally retarded. That would have explained a lot.
Or maybe she was like a little maybe Aspergian or something.
Yeah, maybe she had to wear a helmet, something.
Yeah. Well, who else would you have cast in this role?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, she wasn't supposed to be a femme fatale. She was supposed to be kind of, I mean, she was not supposed to be Daphne. She was definitely supposed to be Velma.
Yeah.
But she didn't seem very smart. That's the thing, is that literally the first, and I'm no scientist. I am no Brother Drew. I did not look at it, I don't think, through as if I was a participant in that particular like meeting that she was, or presentation. But she literally says, oh no, I can make this work. You just have to trust me.
Yeah.
It's like, well, no, these other guys who were discredited, that's what they said too, man.
Yeah. So much for science.
Yeah, exactly. So also she kept, whenever anybody looked at her formula, they kept saying, oh my goodness, it was right there all the time. It was so obvious. Why didn't we think of that? I could not deal with that part of it.
Well, and it clearly wasn't that simple. And the fact that it didn't work when they had the formula, because, you know, magically something was missing or she had put in the right order.
He just didn't get far enough in her underwear to find that last post-it.
They weren't post-its. They were just folded up pieces of paper.
Yeah, okay. She was a scientist. She could have developed a post-it, I'm just saying.
Well, and besides that, I mean, if you really want to dog on the parts of the movie, like, she's this crazy scientist and she's going to keep notes in her boobies, for one. But two, she's working on a formula that other people would probably kill for, by the way.
Indeed.
You know, as evidenced by Tretiak alone was trying to kill her. So, you know, I don't know. No, she's not the sharpest tool in the shed. Also, why did she come to the UK?
Well, exactly. Maybe she was doing the presentation there, but they didn't really discuss that too much.
Yeah. I mean, but it's just one of those plot points where you're like, why? There's no why. There's no point.
Also,
but again,
the movie didn't have to be, I mean, the movie took place mostly in Russia, right? So he didn't have to be British. I mean, you don't know what his real accent is because he keeps changing it all the time, which is nice, but there was no reason he had to be British. She didn't have to come to the UK for any particular reason. She could have all been done in Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. Anyway. Okay, so sorry. You were about to discuss something else.
This movie had a fantastic soundtrack. I don't know if you noticed all the artists
really.
That were in it.
Huh, do tell.
Okay. I'm going to go down the list. Because after like the third song, I was like, are you kidding? So, okay. There was Daft Punk. Okay. There was Duncan Sheik, the Sneaker Pimps, Smashing Pumpkins, Moby.
Wow, these are all like hot artists in 1987.
I know. Fluke, the Chemical Brothers, Everything But the Girl, Orbital, and then the closing song was by Duran Duran.
Okay, well, okay. So then why didn't I have this album?
Probably because you never saw the movie.
Maybe. Well, I think maybe it was 1 year too early. Because when Terry moved to England, I think that must have been in 98, maybe? 98, 99, I think, was the serious time. Yeah, because I think I visited in 98 and 2000. And yeah, I mean, I was into all that stuff right then. Like, I think probably my favorite, I've never seen this movie either, but one of my favorite soundtracks from that time was the Great Expectations soundtrack.
Huh.
That and Cruel Intentions, which I did see, and I did like a lot, and I love the soundtrack to that. But Great Expectations had a bunch of stuff, like some Duncan Sheik and some Toad the Wet Sprocket, and I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but it had a bunch of really awesome stuff. I think maybe some Natalie Imbruglia was there. Oh, yeah, good times.
That's awesome. It's funny how, because soundtracks, now movie soundtracks are very different to me. Because now it's like, it's all, they're almost all very commercial. There's almost no, just like, it happens to be a soundtrack that people to buy, but now they're very contrived, where before, I think, soundtracks weren't really produced, and I think now they're entirely produced.
Well, it was a lot cheaper, I think, to get your music into movies back then.
Yeah.
Because now it's very expensive.
Now it's used as marketing, yeah.
Yeah, so you're either putting out, you know, as an artist, you're putting out music just to get publicity, but you're not doing it to get publicity to sell albums because people don't make money selling albums anymore. So yeah. Instead, putting your music in the movie would be the way to make the money. Cause like, I think Almost Famous had a music budget of what, like $3 to $5 million.
Wow.
And that's what he needed to get the songs that he wanted and still didn't get all of them.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, there's no way a regular studio is going to pay that much money unless it's like the movie, a movie like say FM or the movie, even American Graffiti. Ugh. You'd never get all those artists. So.
There's two soundtracks. So there's a soundtrack of all two soundtracks. One soundtrack with most of the artists I mentioned, and then a separate soundtrack that is just the score.
Oh, yeah. That's a big thing, too.
Yeah. I love movie scores, especially if it's a good movie score. I think my favorite movie score... it's from Sneakers.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to say Psycho, because the Bernard Herrmann violins thing that runs through the whole movie is just pretty amazing.
Oh, you don't like the Eyes Wide Shut piano strikes?
No, I do not. That was awful. Ding, 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 ding. Oh, yeah, I don't think so.
But no, I really dig the Sneakers soundtrack. Branford Marsalis, I mean, it's one of those things that it really is a great, because it's got some very, very tense, frantic music to it, but it's also got some great lift to it too. So I can't recommend. I own it, of course, the soundtrack and the movie. But this is a solid like C+, B- movie.
Yeah, I think that's an apt description. It's not going to win any awards, but it's not going to really win any Razzies either. It's fine. It's perfectly acceptable as like a Saturday afternoon movie you catch on TV.
Yeah, this is like a rainy day movie. I don't want to leave the house kind of thing.
Yeah. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.